I want to ask a very profound question this morning. And I want you to raise your hand. No hiding. Now, what if I ask the question? How many of you would say today that you have a good friend? We have a little critique here. This is a timely lesson. At least one, at least a friend. Now, there may be multiple friends that you have, but I think I saw virtually every hand in the room go up. And sometimes we're in need of forgiveness, sometimes we're in need of encouragement, but the Lord provides both, and so do our friends. If I asked another set of hands to go up, I think I might see almost an equal number if I asked you how many of you have what you would consider to be a best friend. It's one thing to have a good friend, it's another thing to have a best friend, and each one of us probably can identify some people who may be former best friends because we were living in other parts of the country at a certain point and they were in our lives, and those who are current best friends who are currently ministering to us in that special way that good friends do, right? We can do. Well, the Lord created this relationship among all the other relationships that we have. And I was thinking about this because in the little book I wrote to follow, I have one section on relationships, and friendship is the, or friends are the last of the relationships I talk about. I talk about wives and parents and children and government and citizens and other various kinds of relationships. And then when I came to friends, I suddenly realized that any one of the other relationships could also incorporate friendship. That is, husbands and wives can be friends, parents and children can be friends, and so on, in all of the relationships, including those who are not otherwise related to us in any other way, can be friends. The Greek word for a friend is, well, you know, the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, is that very word. And so we know that we are those who are capable of being lovers of friends, being lovers of those who are in our lives. And if there is a single word which one attaches to the word friend, it is the word love. So the city of brotherly love is a good definition of a friend, of what it means to be and to have a true friend. It's one whom one loves or one who is loved. Now, there are things that hurt and harm and in some cases can even destroy friendship. We talked about two of them in the last two lessons we've had. Gossip is one thing that can separate friends. Whispers, we're told, can separate the best of friends. With strife, fighting, conflict can cause interruption in a relationship, in a friendship relationship. All of these things can hurt friendships. And we're going to talk about some of these issues today. But we also want to talk about those things that bind us together to those who are our friends. And love, of course, is the best inclusive words and talk about all of those things that bind us together. Well, the book of Proverbs has a lot to say about friends and friendship. For example, it tells you how to choose your friends. It tells you how to keep your friends. It even tells you how to lose your friends. Well, there's a movie about out now about how to lose whatever in 10 days. Well, I haven't seen that. I'm not sure I intend to, but never mind. The scriptures do talk about how to lose your friends, whether you intend to or not. Another interesting one is how to tell your friends from your friends. How to tell who your real friends are. And finally, how to be a friend. It's one thing to have a friend, it's another thing to be a friend, and they are reciprocal. That's the one thing about friendship relationships. As compared or contrasted with any other kind of relationship, is that to have a friendship relationship requires that it be reciprocal. That is to say, it is impossible to have a one-sided friendship. It is possible to be friendly to someone, but it is impossible to have a friendship unless there is reciprocation, unless there is mutuality involved. Did I see a hand? Yes. Tom.
About
the choosing of friends.
Often maybe it's not happening. Like business is like me.
Yes, sometimes you don't set about creating a plan whereby you're going to select a friend. If indeed someone comes into your life and that person, by virtue of a continued contact and so on, gradually becomes your friend. I think that probably more often than not, that is the way that it happens. But the choosing of friends comes about when you realize the kind of person who has become your friend. Then you can choose whether this is the person that you want to continue to be a friend to, or to have as a friend, or whether this relationship is one that you may not want to continue. I think that's the kind of question that a person needs to ask about every relationship that could be considered a friendship relationship. Is this the kind of relationship that should continue as a friendship? Some ought not to continue. Well, you know, there's a much deeper notion of friendship presented in the scriptures than we have in our popular culture. Isn't that true? Obviously. I know that there are a lot of folks who tend to be what I would call name droppers. You know, so-and-so is my friend, so-and-so is my friend. And what they mean is they're my acquaintance. And you know, they would recognize me if they saw me on the street. Or they might know my face if they didn't know my name. You know, but they're my friend. Yes, we're on a first-name basis. Someone who is a business colleague could be considered or called my friend because of the interaction that we have on a regular basis. So we use sometimes that word friend rather broadly and rather loosely to talk about mere acquaintances that we have. There's even a TV show which I have never seen, but understand has certain kind of content called Friends. And there are some friendships that are healthy, and there are some friendships that build you up, and there are some friendships that may not be healthy and that don't build you up. But in any case, the Bible's view of what friendship should be is a far cry from the superficial notion that passes for friendship today. Webster defines a friend or a friendship as one attached to another by affection or esteem. One attached to another by affection or esteem, or both. It also can be defined, a friend can also be defined as a favored companion. A favored companion, which means you spend more time with this person than you do with many or any other. All of these things, which are definitions of, shall we say, proximity. I call them proximity definitions. You know, you hang around, you spend time with this individual, hence they tend to, shall we say, be called a friend or to be given the title friend. But what does the Bible have to say, particularly what does the book of Proverbs have to say about friendship and about friends? First of all, how to choose your friends. Assuming, of course, that there is a point at which you may have to make a decision whether to keep someone who has become a close acquaintance or not as a friend. Turn to Proverbs chapter 12. Proverbs chapter 12. And then we're going to turn to 1 Corinthians 15 in just a second. So, Proverbs 12 and then 1 Corinthians 15. Gives us pause when we read these words. Proverbs 12 and verse 26. The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. That is, leads the person who becomes a friend of someone who follows the way of the wicked. For the way of the wicked leads them astray. The righteous should choose his friends carefully. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And we'll come right back to Proverbs 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Do not be deceived. Don't kid yourself. Don't think, I'm not going to be influenced by these persons who pursue certain kinds of evil ways. I'm not going to be influenced by them. Don't you kid yourself. Don't you be deceived. You hang around folk who are leading a lifestyle that is contrary to the Word of God. You hang around them long enough, they will influence you one way or another. Evil company corrupts good habits. Therefore, it's important that we choose our friends carefully. Proverbs chapter 13, the very next proverb after the one we just read, gives us the flip side of this. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. He who walks with wise men or wise persons will be wise. You're going to get a positive influence if you choose difference. But the companion of fools will be destroyed. Now you can choose a companion, you can even choose a lifelong companion who can come close to ruining you, who can come close to destroying you, especially if that companion turns out to be a fool and doesn't understand the things of God and lives in a very superficial kind of a way, a worldly kind of way. He who walks with wise men will be wise, will be blessed, and will be lifted up, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. That is, there is a tendency for us to be taken down by those whose lifestyle and whose whole value system is contrary to that of the Word of God. And we know from our own experience, I'm not going to ask for hands on this one, we probably know from our own experience sometime in our life when we have associated with one or another person whose values and whose lifestyle has served to pull us down. And it's because it is hard to maintain a friendship without joining in, without participating in the activities of the person who has that unbiblical lifestyle. And it's because you value, quote, the friendship. You are attached emotionally to the person, that you are pulled into the lifestyle, pulled into whatever the habits are that that person is engaged in. It's hard to resist, because the only other alternative in a case like that is to jettison the relationship. And that's sometimes a lot harder than resisting. So I think that we need to be aware of the fact that that is the natural tendency. We shouldn't kid ourselves, as we just read in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, about the influence that can come to pass and be brought to bear upon us in our lives. And therefore, we should choose our friends carefully, wisely. That's the point that is being made here about how to choose your friend. One might say how to decide when to friend and whether to keep a friend. Yes.
When you are following the Lord,
yes,
you lose the meaning.
It is true. The Lord himself said that he did not come to bring, in that sense, peace, but a sword. And that is to say that there would be division occur, sometimes within families, sometimes between friends, among those who are believers versus those who are not, because, to pick up the theme that we just talked about a moment ago, some person who may have formerly been an associate or a companion, a buddy, a friend, that did things with you, you did things with them, when you no longer do those things, they feel uncomfortable, or they feel that you become Ms. Goody Two-Shoes, and therefore that you're no longer fun to be with. And you have to convince them that I'm having more fun than you think you're having. So that becomes an issue in itself. But you're right. You're absolutely right. How to keep your friends. How to choose which friends to keep, and then once you've chosen them, how to maintain, how to keep your friends. Well, the best way, Proverbs chapter 18, we'll come back to this in another context later, but Proverbs chapter 18, here's the best way to keep your friends. Proverbs 18, great passage, 18:24. A man or woman who has friends must himself or herself be friendly. I like the second half of the verse, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Now, that's a general term, a general statement, rather, and what it's saying is that there can be some people come into your lives, and I can tell you this is true. If you can recall a time in your own life where, before which you were not a Christian, and after which you had become a Christian, where you had family members who were not Christians, and then after you had become a Christian, you gained Christian friends, and you were closer to the Christian friends than you were to some of your family members. And that's essentially what's being said, that it is likely the case that if you have a true friend, that the closeness you will have with a true friend may indeed turn out to be closer than the closeness you may have with certain family members. Yes?
A friend in need is a friend indeed.
Thank you, Benjamin Franklin. Yes. Yes, but Ben had some good things to say. I remember him well. He and I went to the same high school. Different classes. Actually, that's true, but different classes. How do you keep your friends? By being a friend. And secondly, now this is going to be very convicting. Turn to chapter 27. Verse 10. Chapter 27, verse 10. Do not forsake your own friend. That is, don't fail to do what it takes to maintain the friendship by neglecting your friend.
Don't neglect your friend. Do not forsake your own friend. Or your father's friend. That's an interesting add-on, isn't it? That there are friends that are personal friends, and there are friends who are friends of the family, so to speak. And the friends of the family may be as important in your life as your own personal buddies and friends may turn out to be. And so you don't want to ever neglect any friendship that is valuable, that is genuine, where God has brought someone into your life. You need to nurture that relationship, not neglect that relationship. If you want to keep a friend, you need to work at it. Cultivation is really what we're talking about here. You don't accidentally maintain a friendship any more than you accidentally maintain a marriage. It requires working at it and requires cultivation. So how do you keep your friends? First of all, being a friend. Secondly, by not neglecting your friend. Now, this last one will make you smile. That was convicting. Now, let me give you one to make you smile. Turn to Proverbs 25 and verse 17. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. Don't be a pest. Oh, I'll put it in a positive way. Give your friend some space. Okay? Give your friend some space. Allow them to breathe on their own without your kind of taking in the same breath that has just been breathed out. Some of us can become almost obsessive about our friendships. And we are friends who do indeed stick closer than a brother in too literal a sense. And so we need not to stick so close sometimes. That is to say, we need not to bug the folks who are truly our friends, lest they stop being our friends. Now, that sounds humorous. It may not be humorous under certain circumstances, and I'll tell you why. Because friendships are formed out of both mutual admiration and mutual need. Mutual admiration and mutual need. That's how friendships are formed. And when you're close to someone, there is a desire to be around them. It is so natural that it goes hand in hand with being a friend. If you truly are someone's friend, you want to be in their presence. You want to be in their company. You want to spend time with them because you like them and because they are your friend. And so there's a fine line between the natural tendency to want to spend a lot of time with the person who is really your friend on the one hand, and in effect suffocating them with your presence by being around too much, and therefore not giving them space, and therefore causing them to say, whoa, you know, I need some space here. That can happen. I know.
I think that first one time with a son who had a friend who was around too much.
Yeah. Then we probably can all cite examples. Now, the next one is how to lose your friends in 10 easy lessons. No. How to lose your friends. We talked about this or alluded to this first one, so I'm not going to do it because we had a separate lesson on it. For example, by gossiping. Gossiping. It says that if you're talking about your friend to somebody else, and your friend finds out that you talked about them to somebody else, it says a whisperer can separate even the best of friends. You gossip, you give away secrets. That's the whole point of friendship. True friendship, especially those who are your best friends, they're persons to whom you should be able to share, with whom you should be able to share everything, that is to have confidence in their ability to maintain confidence. One of the things that I have had sometimes problems with over the years is having acquaintances / friends who didn't know how to maintain confidence. And if you don't maintain confidence, if you do share secrets that are given to you as secrets, that is because they want to be able to unburden themselves, they want to be able to talk to someone who will not judge them and who will listen to them and who will give them some good advice. They have reasons why they want to share the deepest and sometimes the most painful things that are going on in their hearts. They also expect you to maintain their privacy. And it's not just because of the HIPAA Act, which you may all be familiar with if you're in the business world these days. It's rather because of the fact that friendship is based on trust. Marriage is based on trust. Any deep, abiding relationship is based on trust. And if you have a friend, if you're going to be a friend, then you have to earn that kind of confidence. You have to earn that kind of trust. And by the way, it's something you keep on earning. Because you see, in a marriage and in a friendship, you can break that confidence, you can break that trust ever so easily. One act can breach the trust in a friendship or in another kind of relationship. And so maintaining confidence, maintaining trustworthiness in a relationship that matters is critical. Because if they know that they can count on you, if they know that they can trust you to maintain confidence, and not to betray them by sharing what they shouldn't share, then you have a friend for life. Because this is a person that you'll be a go-to friend. You're going to be the kind of friend that they will so be able to so rely on, because they have confidence in your character and your integrity and your ability to handle those kinds of confidences, that they're going to come to you again and again because you've shown yourself to be trustworthy. So how to lose your friend? Talk about them. Don't show yourself trustworthy. I'll tell you another way to lose your friend. By nitpicking them. Now, nobody else here that ever does this. But criticize them in an unwarranted way, even if it's true. Even if it's true now. I want you to understand that criticism, sometimes may be truthful, and sometimes, you know, you get a retort back like this. You know, why do you keep bringing these things up? And the answer is, I'm only telling the truth. Well, that's sometimes a small and not a justifiable response, because what you're doing in, quote, telling the truth, unquote, is to be reminding them constantly of their faults. And the person that does that, whether they're doing it deliberately or whether they're not doing it deliberately, creates a certain wedge, a certain barrier, even if it's momentary, in the relationship, because, and I want you to look with me at a passage that I have made one of my memory verses, chapter 17, and I'll get you a hand in just a moment. Verse 9, 17:9 of Proverbs. There are two meanings here. One is the meaning that refers to gossiping or whispering when we talk about repeating a matter. Another is this matter of bringing things up over and over again to your friend. Look at chapter 17 and verse 9. He who covers a transgression seeks love. By covers, it means is not constantly bringing up, but tends to, you know, put a protective cover over your friend. You're not going to expose your friend's foibles. You're going to cover their transgressions in that sense of protection. In that sense, you're demonstrating love, because you're wanting to protect them by that kind of protective covering. That's what's being said here. You're showing love in that sort of way. He who covers a transgression, who protects his friend by covering over that transgression, not by watering down or minimizing, but by not exhibiting or exposing, seeks love and exhibits love. But he who repeats a matter separates friends. Now, repeat, remember I said, could mean two things. It could mean the matter of the gossip and the whispering. On the one hand, it could mean the matter of bringing it up over and over again. So that, first of all, it does a terrible job on your self-image. You know, you think of, if you already think you're guilty about something, and you may have a worm's eye view to start with, then it doesn't take a lot of repetition for you to think worse even of yourself than you began to think at the beginning. And especially if the person who's doing it to you is the person you care about and the person you trust. And they're the ones who's rubbing your nose in it. And so understand that we do that to one another. And it is wrong. It is a lesson I have to learn along with everyone else, that it is not always right to tell the truth. Sometimes the reason we tell the truth is because we seek to gain an advantage. And that is a power trip. And that's wrong. That we may seek, by making another person feel less about themselves, to make us look better. Or to gain control in an emotional sense. Because as they become aware of the fact that we are aware of their foibles, then they become, shall we say, uncomfortable in our presence. Or they may become sensitive to our criticisms. Or they may feel that they're inferior to us in some way. Because we've made it clear that by our criticism, we must be better than they. When we're not. Yes, Arsha.
To call it something I've seen people do, spouses and friends and brothers and sisters, is that once something is over, there's been a disagreement or there's been a problem, instead of once it's done and accepting it, forgiving it, and being gone with it, the next time they get angry, or 3 years down the road when they get angry, you always do so-and-so, you did this and this and this and that.
Yeah, the bringing up of the history.
Done, it should be done.
The bringing up of the history. I have to confess I have done that. And it is a sinful thing to do. And I think that as I recognize that in myself, it is a lack of a forgiving spirit. in the bottom. It's a lack of a forgiving spirit. Because God himself forgives and forgets. We may forgive, but we do not always easily forget. And there is that matter of the elephantine memory. There is the matter of the catalyst, whatever the irritant may be, that you just press that button and out comes the laundry list because of the elephantine memory. And I think that litany of problems that keeps getting brought up really probably betokens deep hurt on the part of the person who's bringing it up. Their own issues are really involved as well. And so, or their hurt, or their issues, or their power attempt, or whatever it is that's causing them to constantly hold the other person down by that means, that's something that they should be repentant of and change. And that's, and as I say, I'm not pointing any fingers in other directions that I would not point here at myself, because I do. Yes?
Are there any scriptures that would show or give any indication why we women are so good at that?
I'm going to wait for testimonies on this one. Does anyone care to give a testimony as to why? She said, we women. Now, you understand that put me on the outside in terms of answering it existentially. I can answer it theoretically, but not existentially. I dare not answer that question. Is there a testimony in the crowd? Do I see a hand? No, not you. You're not qualified. You're not qualified. The question is, why is it that we women are so skillful at remembering everything at certain key moments? Yes. Sherry. Sherry has her hand up. I see that hand. I see that hand.
No, I mean, I'm glad on how he says that we're the weaker vessel. And I know sometimes we're very sensitive and very emotional and we kind of hurt very easily.
That's a fact.
And so perhaps that's what it is. We get hurt, we just remember.
God has given...
We're a lot more resilient and the warrior...
Seemingly. There's a lot of brittleness in men despite their calm exterior. And they internalize their stress and they get more heart attacks as a result of that. But I will tell you that ladies do have, and it's a gift of God, they're given emotion to be nurturers, to be able to be those who can bear up under the stupidity of men, to be able to be those who can... see, I could say that authentically. I could say that authentically.
There's been more women in here than me.
Yes. Another testimony. No.
Women have longer memories.
I think that's the point.
If a person is married, be wise and say to her husband, right then, remember that they have
We use indelible ink when it comes to writing down these things. Yes, Milam.
Part of it is because men are so forgetful and these women can bring up things that are not true and we don't know it's true.
Oh! I think we're going down a slippery slope. We better not go down that slope any further. Jeanette.
Why don't you just say it's a spiritual gift and be done?
Well, actually, there's something to that. Where did I put my... Well, it's just having a good memory can come in handy sometimes. And yes, men are often forgetful. By the way, I call it selective memory. Men are not always really forgetful. It's just that they kind of squash things they don't want to remember because there are things that are more important to them, and that is where they get into big, big trouble. Selective memory. Yes?
Here's an answer for us men right here.
Oh, he's got a response.
17:26.
17:26 of Proverbs, yes.
It is not good to punish an innocent man.
And the scripture says, there is... Now listen to this, Charlie. The scripture says, there is none righteous, no, not one. Romans 3:10. It would be true if there were an innocent man, but there isn't an innocent man. Hence, it's a theoretical possibility. All right. How to lose your friends. In 10 easy lessons. By gossiping about them, by repeating their evils to them, or about them, by neglecting them, we looked at that earlier, That's another way to lose your friend. We've already talked about that. Now I want you to turn to one that is hurtful, perhaps beyond measure, and as a way to lose your friend, it's the worst way to lose your friend, and turn to the book of Psalms for this one. This is poignant. I think you'll see when we see the passage why it is poignant. But this is the worst way to lose a friend. 41 of Psalms. 41 of Psalms. And verse 9. Familiar passage. Even my own familiar friend, in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. Betrayal. 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 Judas. This is the passage that refers to Judas. Actually, is quoted in the New Testament as referring to Judas. Betrayal is the worst way to lose a friend. You can betray them by gossiping about them. You can betray them by violating promises or a trust. You can betray them emotionally. You can betray them physically. There are lots of ways in which you can betray a friend. But betrayal is, of all ways to lose a friend, the worst. And it is probably the one way that makes it the most difficult to restore the relationship. Because we talk about forgiving and forgetting, but there's some betrayals that are so deep and they're so hurtful that it is hard to come back from them. It's hard to say it doesn't matter. Even if I've forgiven you, it's hard to say it doesn't matter because it has so impacted my life in a negative way that I'm unable to get over it, to get past it. And I think that this kind of betrayal, from whatever source, of whatever kind, is the best way to lose a friendship. Now, I will tell you this. The worst way to lose a friendship. I'll tell you.